Welcome to Women's Wellness Podcast with Lucy Coutinho and Nahal Horn. This is a podcast by and about BIPOC women who are going through the healing process. We hold this space for women to share their unique stories, created with the love for storytelling and passion for mental health and wellness in mind. The aim is to help amplify the voices of women everywhere. These conversations will feel like having a warm cup of coffee or tea with a friend. So grab yours and let's enjoy. Today's special guest is Muzna Abbas, author of Letters to My Brown Mother, igniting a conversation about mental health in the South Asian diaspora. Abbas holds a dual master's degree in business and foreign services from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. As a first-generation Pakistani-American, she understands the relationship between mental health and cultural sensitivity when it comes to therapy. Let's just dive right in. Let's welcome in Muzna. How are you feeling today?
I am doing great. How are you all?
Doing pretty good. Happy to have you.
So excited to have you.
Yeah,
really excited to be here.
Awesome. So the first question I had for you is, why has mental health been a taboo topic in the South Asian diaspora? And how has this shaped your own experience, your own personal experience?
That's a great question, Lucy. Yeah, I think with mental health, there's several reasons why it is taboo in the South Asian culture in general. First being that there is just a lack of awareness on what mental health is and what it really looks like. It's either you're crazy and you need to be institutionalized, or you're fine and there's nothing wrong with you. There is really no in-between understanding of what different types of mental health look like, what different types of mental illnesses look like. And so with that lack of awareness, there becomes a stigma on, oh, if you're talking about mental health, you must be crazy. You must be like schizophrenic or something. And so with that, it creates this difficulty in people wanting to reach out when they need help and when they need support, because there's this shame attached to it. So this lack of understanding builds this shame culture around mental health. People don't seek help. People don't really understand what they need to seek help for. And that also begets worse mental health outcomes for those that do really need to seek help. So often people are suffering in silence of something they don't even understand. And as the generations continue, this sort of cycle continues on and ends up getting worse.
As Muzna is talking about this, like, I'm also South Asian, so as she's talking, I'm like nodding my head. I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, sadly it is so if somebody has a mental health episode or issue, then it brings shame to the entire family, because it's such a group-centered culture, as so many Eastern cultures are. And I love how you said, you know, like, now this generation, I feel like, especially with people like you writing this book, making it more easily accessible, that the stigmas can be broken. It's like, we're the cycle breakers in a way.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's something I talk a lot about in the book, is this notion that South Asian cultures and a lot of immigrant cultures in general are collectivist cultures. And that really means that instead of the individual at the center or the core of like the cultural structure, it's the group, the family unit.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you said that, because then that's where the shame comes in, because if there's something wrong with you, or the notion that there may be something wrong with you because you want to seek therapy, you're reflecting this. It's like you're representing a whole group of people, right? So,
exactly. Your parents are going to feel like, oh, it's my fault. I didn't do a good job raising you. And other people are going to be like, oh, your parents must have done something wrong. There's a lot of that goes around too.
Ugh. Yeah, and you so eloquently put that in your book, and like you even use like the language like Urdu and Hindi and like how there's certain terms. Like, can you share some of like the sayings that like a South Asian or immigrant parent would say to their kid?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest ones is lo kya kahenge, which translates to what will people say? And I wrote a
Yes.
whole chapter on that because that is something that gets thrown around as a justification for so many things. You know, you get called drama baz, somebody who's trying to like create drama or make a show. And it really, a lot of those terms put down the experience of somebody who maybe is having trouble with their mental health because it makes them feel like they're making it up. They're not working hard enough. They're just trying to get attention. They're lying, and that makes it very difficult. I actually, through the course of writing this book, I learned, I was doing research, that there is no term for a lot of these things in our language, and that directly affects our ability to understand it because there aren't words to describe what really is going on. Depression, the word to describe that is sadness, and that's not what depression clinically is. And even anxiety is described or can be translated as being like under stress or being worried, but anxiety goes out to so much more. And so without the proper terms to really understand and acknowledge these, it's hard to grasp what they really are and what they really mean.
Wow.
Yeah. My gosh.
That,
I'm like
yeah. That,
processing this all.
yeah, because I come from a Cape Verdean background, right? So everything that you're saying is resonating so loudly with me because that's exactly what we go through, you know, the name calling, the shaming, and the feeling like, oh, you're embarrassing the family. And so we go through kind of like almost through it your entire life, not acknowledging, you know, the healing that needs to be done or the trauma that needs to be addressed, right? So I think having these very honest conversations is really important, and I'm glad you're able to do that, not just for the Asian diaspora, but for immigrant communities all around the world, because it sounds to me that this is a common thread that, unfortunately, we're all dealing with. So let's just go deeper into this book. So, what exactly inspired you to write Letters to My Brown Mother?
So this is written a little bit based on my own experience dealing with mental health when I was in college. That's kind of where my journey with mental health really started. And when I was first being diagnosed with just being depressed, I didn't even understand what that meant. So I had never really understood the con or heard of the concept before because it's not something that gets talked about. And so through the course of understanding what that meant, going through my own journey of feeling shame about it, feeling like there's something wrong with me, and talking to other people about it is what really helped me not only understand my condition, but also get better. The more I told people, like, hey, this is something that I'm dealing with, the more I was able to sort of quote unquote identify the monster and really break it down. And so that is something that really helped me. And when I had the opportunity to write this book, every time I would have a conversation with somebody about it, like, oh, I'm thinking about writing a book on this topic. 9 times out of 10, the response I would get is that, wow, nobody is doing this, and this is something that we really need. And so that really fuels my fire and added on to the passion I already had about this. So, you know, June 2020, we're all in our homes. I took this as an opportunity to be able to reach out to people I wouldn't normally be able to connect with and interview them. Everything was over Zoom, and that made it so much easier to chat with people about these things and chat with people that lived across the country. So I was really able to get a wide variety of interviewees, and I took their stories took a lot of what they told me, took what I kind of already knew about the culture, and turned them into letters. So the letters were fictional based on several people's stories that they told me.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still fictional in the arc of the stories. But they really speak to the issues and situations and experiences of a lot of the folks that I interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question just to follow up on that. So as you write this book and as it's published, like, first of all, that is such a huge feat and something to be proud of. And I think that's something that brings a lot of like pride to a family is, you know, here, my daughter is a published author. Have your parents read it? What was their reaction? Can you walk us through kind of like, you know, navigating, bringing this out into the open and your own family's reaction?
Yeah, that's a great question. So in the beginning, when I talked to mental health about my parents, and this is a few years before this book, it was something they didn't understand. They were very uncomfortable right. talking about it, you know, as most of mm-hmm. parents are. Even when I told them I was going to write this book, they were very apprehensive and cautious. And they're like, why would you do this? Write about anything else in the world. As I kind of went through the summer of interviewing people, I would talk to my parents about the interviews. I'm like, oh, I interviewed somebody, you know, they talked about this growing up, this is what they experienced, and this is what they felt about that experience. And as I talked about it over time, they really started to become a lot more open to the concept, to the topic, and just mental health in general. So much so that, you know, they're a lot more forthcoming about therapy. I remember in the beginning, I would tell, you know, I would bring it into conversation to sort of normalize therapy. I would be like, oh, my therapist said this. And you could see that made them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But now when I do it, it's very normal for them. And they've really come a long way from the beginning to now. So this book not only helped me kind of talk to people, but even just in my own family, I've noticed such a big change. So wow. I was really proud to be able to do that.
Wow. Yeah, it's like maybe it was an eye-opening like experience mm-hmm. for them, and that's brave. I love that, and I'm especially happy that the outcome, you know, happened to be that. And so can you share with us some words from your book that we can like listen yeah. to right now? Because I'm just I know my listeners, our listeners want to hear it too. And I'm really curious about what it would sound like, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I have a few passages that I'm happy to read. All right. And so when I do this, there will be a few terms that are in Urdu / Hindi. So I will mm-hmm. translate them right after. So just for the listeners to beware.
Of course, yeah.
Log kya kahenge? What will people say? This mantra is etched so deeply into our minds that we don't even need our parents to ask us this question anymore. We do it ourselves. In our culture, our lives are dictated not by us, but rather by what others might think of us. But lo kya kahenge, what will people say, isn't actually the inquiry it appears to be. At best, it's a rhetorical question, not so subtly nudging us to stay in our place. We're reminded that there is already an identity and path chosen for us, one we're forbidden from veering away from. Ironically, there is no question about it. Our parents and society give us an ultimatum based on a certain valued appearance, attitude, and mannerism. This is the only way to be you. You are who I tell you you are. We know best. We're suffocated by these proclamations that control the gears running our society, where everyone is the judge, jury, and executioner. The morality of outsiders is revered, no matter how unjust they may be. Lo kya kahenge, what will people say, is really controlled by another name. Our society expects, demands, we do things and behave a certain way, and they're not quiet about it. The communities we're a part of are quick to judge our actions and circumstances without even knowing the full story. We're stripped of agency in our own lives. The people run the show, and we're merely their puppets. The puppet masters, then, feel entitled to know the goings-on in every household. They've already stripped away our agency, so they take our privacy as well. Under the guise of lo kya kahenge, what will people say, the South Asian community around us becomes a sort of big brother. As we try to navigate forming an identity, even if in secret, we must watch out for the surveillance from those around us. If we think our parents aren't watching, some auntie definitely is. If we're found to be doing anything other than what is expected of us, we're shamed and guilted about it. We've not only disobeyed our elders, but we've tarnished their reputation of perfection and order. That was from the chapter titled Lo Kya Kahenge. There are two other passages I'm going to read, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go for it. Of course.
While you're looking for the chapter, I want to just tell listeners. So I'm holding the book in my hand and I'm looking at it. And I just want to just let you know that the art is so beautiful on the front. It's like a woman with mendi, you know, like on a wedding day, they'll do mendi on your hand with this beautiful ornate patterns. And is she holding like a brain that has all these beautiful, like, artwork? Oh, wow. It's so beautiful. Who is the illustrator?
Yeah, so the art was commissioned by Half and Half. She's an artist out of Brooklyn, New York, I believe. Her Instagram is Half and Half. Definitely check her out. It's HAF and HAF. Her work is really unique, very cool. She's also Pakistani-American, so I reached out. I wanted the art to be also by somebody South Asian.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Wow, that's amazing.
Awesome. So one other passage. Finally, I want to say, this book is not meant to demonize our cultures. This is my culture and I love it. I take pride in it. Nevertheless, much of what I say remains critical of our culture. This critique is important and necessary because we can do better. We must do better. If we don't, we will keep driving away our own people from this beautiful culture. There are already so many of us who feel suffocated by the rigidity of our culture and find it necessary to shun their quote-unquote desi side. If that continues to happen, the South Asian heritage that made us who we are will slowly become extinct. Our culture keeps harming and hurting the mental health of future generations. More and more people will decide to erase their South Asian identities, and that would be the real shame.
Mm. Wow.
Oh my gosh.
That's powerful. Thank you. Thank you for sharing, and thank you for writing this piece. I am curious about the title of the book. Where did that come from for you?
Yeah, so when I came up with the idea of turning a lot of these stories into letters, I really thought about that. The first letter I actually wrote was from the perspective of a daughter writing to her mother. And that's sort of where that came from. Even the letter writing, it really came from this idea that letters are really the most personal form of communication out there, apart from, you know, being with somebody. You can really like pour your heart out in a letter and say a lot of the things that you haven't said before. It's different from a text message or even a phone call where you may get nervous speaking with somebody. But when you're really able to put pen on paper and talk to this person, sit there, reflect, and write this letter, it really is a very therapeutic form of writing as well. And so that's really where the letters came from.
So was it almost like all the things that you wanted to say to your mom or from a daughter's perspective, like what a daughter would want to say to her mom? And so is it kind of something like that? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
I love that so much. Beautiful. Yes.
And for anyone listening, there's so many great strategies for self-care in this book as well.
Oh, wow. Definitely need that.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That definitely. Congratulations on writing this book. And thank you for writing this book. We're really grateful for it. It speaks for a lot of us. And these are honest conversations that we need to have more of. And I do trust and hope that it opens that up for healthier conversations and connections and just collective healing as a whole, because I do sense that we are yearning for it so much. And so thank you. And thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing this space with us. We are so, so grateful to have you on. Now, before we go, please tell us where we can support you, where we can join your movement, and we can find a copy of your book. Tell us everything.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was such a great conversation. Mm-hmm. Happy to talk about this. Honestly, I tell people, I'm like, I could talk about this topic for hours. And so it really is really wonderful to have the opportunity to have this conversation. You can find my book on Amazon. There's an ebook, there's a hardcover as well as a paperback. So that's available on Amazon. You can also find my book on Barnes and Nobles. And I'm currently working on getting my book in other bookstores. So listeners, if you are working for bookstores or you are book buyers for a bookshop, please reach out. I would love to get my book on the shelves. I know my book is on the shelves at Busboys and Poets locally here in DC.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Love that place.
Yeah, seriously.
I used to go to their open mic nights every week.
Me too. Wow. And Lucy, you too, right?
Yeah, I did. I spent a lot of time there, especially the one, was it in downtown?
14th Street?
14th. Yeah. The old 14th.
Yeah.
That was my spot.
Tuesday.
Yeah, I did a poetry reading once at one of their locations. And yeah, it's one of my favorite places in DC. Oh my goodness, I miss it so much. It's just gonna be a little nostalgia. I know.
Come back, Lucy.
I know. So yeah, those are to find your work and stay connected. And please do stay connected with us. We would love to be part of your journey, because this is our journey for sure. Thank you, Muzna.
Yes, and of course.
Yeah, always. And you're always, you know, welcome back to talk, because I know this is, like you said, it's a conversation that can go on for hours. And
yeah, we do need
it. Yeah, we barely did that. So, and we do need it to go on for hours, for sure. Yeah. All right. And to my listeners, thank you so much for being here. We do appreciate your presence. Please do stay connected. You can find us on our Instagram page. That's LUCE.inspiration, where we post all the updates and we love the community. We love to build community on there. And please do send us a note. We love notes as well. And we're wishing you all a very good day. Sending you lots of hugs.
Hey guys.